The Clean Power Hour is brought to you by CPS America, the maker of North America's number one three-phase string inverter, with over 6 gigawatts shipped in the U.S. The CPS America product lineup includes three-phase string inverters ranging from 25 to 275 kW. Their flagship inverter, the CPS250-275, is designed to work with solar plants ranging from 2 megawatts to 2 gigawatts. The 250-275 pairs well with CPS America's exceptional data communication, controls, and energy storage solutions. Go to chintpowersystems.com to find out more. Welcome to the Clean Power Hour Live. I'm Tim Montague. It is January 12th. And, you know, here at the Clean Power Hour, we are speeding the energy transition, bringing you the latest and greatest in clean energy news, solar, battery storage, wind, and all forms of clean energy. So check out all our content at cleanpowerhour.com. We do this Thursday live news roundup with my co-host, John Weaver of PV Magazine. And then we do one-on-one interviews, which we drop on Tuesdays. Welcome to the show, John Weaver.
I just want to know one thing, Tim.
Just one?
Well,
I'm going to hold you to it.
What do you think about my new glasses? They're kind of thick in the frame, but, you know, I got new glasses. Just one, they're reading glasses because I'm getting old, apparently. And now because I keep everything tiny on my screen, apparently my doctor, who's my uncle, told me, John, you need reading glasses. It's that time of your life. So these are my new frames.
Welcome to the ordinary world of getting older. And yeah, I think they're cool. They make you look like an artiste.
Oh, and, I'm totally an artiste. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Solar is requires creative talents. It's a lot of engineering and built environment stuff, but you got to be creative. So I lean into that part of my skill set every day. Well, what's going on in your world, John?
Oh, wow, man, it's busy. Let's see some of the things going on. Our residential company is starting to move a tiny bit. We have a small project that's completing construction. We got two projects, smaller ones, 25 and 50 kW that we signed for construction. Still writing for PV Magazine as much as I can, trying to keep up with it. Had a lot of legal stuff to go through with a deal that we're working on, tons of lawyer stuff. The lawyers are expensive, of course, but it just takes a lot of mental time. Tons of things going on. I'm really optimistic on solar and the IRA and everything I see, and everybody's talking. And now we're officially in 2023, which is true 100% IRA land. For me, you know, because projects take a year or two, I was IRA immediately when it signed, whereas everyone else is like, oh, now the IRA is ready. I was like, yeah, I guess sort of. But there's, you know, it's just a lot going on. I'm trying my best to grow my company just a little bit so it can be a sustaining machine.
I thought you were going to say you were trying to grow your beard. And I'm like, oh, well, you should get busy. Lubman has joined us on the live here. And I want to give a shout out to Chris. Yes. He's a solar consultant out on the West Coast. And he commented that in the Marine Corps, we called those glasses BCDs, birth control device.
Thank you, Chris.
I don't think that's true, but anyway.
Chris and I are buddies. He's allowed to say that.
Yeah, yeah. No, so I know you guys know each other. And Chris is a solar panel source, right? What's the brand of solar panels that Chris is selling? He can type it in the chat if you don't know it, John. I can't remember. But
Hyperion,
and yeah.
And they're made by a company named Runergy, who has a history of making solar cells and maybe wafers as well. Yeah. And they recently bought a module assembly factory maybe a year or two ago. We actually have a small purchase coming from them that's probably in the United States now. But at minimum, they were on the ocean for a while.
Yeah. Manufactured in Southeast Asia, or where are they?
Vietnam, I believe, is where they're going to be assembled.
Not China. I think he pointed that out to me when I spoke to him.
They are a Chinese company, though. So, uh-huh. But they weren't, you know, I don't believe they were included in any import tariff challenges. So it seems like they're okay. They recently signed a 1.6, and we should ask Chris to put this one in the room. But they recently signed. Oh, look at that. John, panels arrived. Got word final testing in China for ATI is complete. Look at that. So Chris is working awesome. So Chris, tell us, you guys signed a 1.6 gigawatt deal to supply a U.S. developer. I'm interested. I didn't get past the headline, but I'm wondering who that developer is, if it's allowed as of yet. I don't know. Anybody's doing 1.6 gigs, man. That's awesome. Yes, 3-year supply agreement, confidential. Understandable. But it was on the headline. So, Chris, I hope you close the deal, and I hope that means you get a commission, because, you know, that would be cool. So, yeah, 3-year supply agreement, 1.6 gigs. So that's like 533 megawatts a year of doing some solar, man. That's awesome.
I mean, Chris is a loyal listener, so I invited him to unmute if he wants to introduce himself to our listeners here on the show. I only got to meet Chris a couple weeks ago for the first time, but I appreciate him joining us. He's a regular here on the Thursday Live, so really appreciate
that. He is. We could interview Chris too, because he has a lot of development experience in a lot of different states. And he's worked for a couple of big companies. He still does development, and he knows a lot of stuff. He's good with spreadsheets too. Yeah. He's a solar guy. He knows development, land, and spreadsheets.
We're going to be talking about BIPV. We're going to be talking about the Florida commercial solar market. We're going to be talking about a unique racking product I recently learned about for both flat and sloped roofs in high wind environments like Florida and the Caribbean. And there's a shortage of electricians, which is good for my son because he is applying to the IBEW to become an electrician. That's a great story out of Canary Media. But I'm going to go to the Mitrex story. I'm shocked, John, that I didn't know about this company before. Had you known about Mitrex?
I guarantee you we have brought up Mitrex on the show before, and I've shared their modules before, and you and I actually maybe even saw them at they were sitting out the last show that was out in Cali. They had a big stand right in front of it outside.
Really? No, I I'm not familiar with Mitrex. I certainly have never seen this photo. I mean, the cool thing about this, so they make a solar facade product, and all the brown in this facade is also solar. You've got some
gorgeous,
explicitly solar panels under the windows there. I don't know if those are screens or what, but the brown facade on this is a solar facade product out of Canada.
That's good looking stuff. So, and they have other ones. They have 4 or 5 modules I've seen, including 1 or 2 that look like amazing camouflage standard tiles, standard shingles. And it's like, wow, that's, you know, this is their solar facade product, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But their shingle tiled product looks just like, and there's their list of products right there. And you look at it and you're like, wow, that's a roof tile. But nope, it's solar panel. And so,
right,
it's pretty cool. Pretty cool module. I think they probably lose 5 to 10% of their efficiency. You know, if it was a 20% module, yeah, there you go. I mean, yes, it's not. It's still a bunch of things up on your roof, but at a quick glance,
if
you have the right install and you did the right work,
it definitely blends in better than traditional black panels. So, yeah, I just think it's great to see this BIPV industry maturing. And, you know, for multifamily especially, or high-rise office, right, these products are so important, right? Because on a multifamily apartment building, you just have a small roof to building volume. So you're only going to be able to offset a small percentage of the load. And generally it's a walk away. You know, you just, You don't go there. And so we need BIPV. Oh man, that is some sexy solar glass. I love this.
I really like when an architect figures out how to make some panels that are not only functional, but truly aesthetically fit. And here, there's a design. And that prior image you saw, there was a design with those four or six panels that were used, and they just fit, and it looked neat. It's just like, oh, there's a little accent, a little artistic accent. Yeah. And I like that semi-transparent. That's what you saw on that one building.
Yeah.
Was a semi-transparent. And it's like, wow, good work.
Yep. So check them out. Mitrex, MITREX. And what are we going to do next? Let's talk about electricians. we are going to electrify everything, meaning we electrify heating and cooling, we electrify transportation, we electrify industrial heat. And what that means is we're building a lot more electrical infrastructure. We're tripling the grid, very likely, a lot more juice. But it's a double edge because you need electricians to install this stuff. And this story focuses on I think, the author's experience or a friend of the author's experience in California trying to get their panel upgraded on their home, I think in Berkeley, California, right? Many older homes have 100 amp panels, and you got to have at least a 200 amp panel typically to install solar or solar and battery. And so you need a panel upgrade. And that means running some additional wires or new wires from the closest transformer to the house so you get more juice to the house. It's not a big deal, but it's a deal if you can't find a contractor who has any availability. And that's the long and short of this. I'll put this on screen briefly. So it's the message here is if you're a person casting about for a career, consider the trades. We tend not to promote the trades very well in American public schools. I think it's a travesty because especially being an electrician is a high paying job. And there's a tremendous shortage of electricians. We're going to need thousands and thousands. Oh, right. It's also a carbon copy episode, the Great Electrician Shortage. And the carbon copy is a great podcast. So what are your thoughts about the electrician shortage, John?
I think it's something that matters. By the way, Chris, you are live. So we just heard you say February on the show. So be careful what you say. Yeah, there you go. Oh, he's back on mute. Dang it. I was hoping him to join in and say something smart. Chris is smart.
I don't know about saying anything smart, but thanks, guys. And I really appreciate the plug and the kind words that you put out at the beginning of the show. And just enjoy it. And, you know, I'll chime in if there's any questions you guys want to throw at me regarding PV modules or development or financing here in the U.S.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, so, Chris, tell us how much capacity does Runnergy have available? If I call you and say, I got a gig, can you supply me a gig?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, as of December of last year, they were at 2 gigawatts on the module capacity and 5 gigawatts on cell capacity. As you had mentioned earlier in the show, John, Runnergy is primarily a cell manufacturer. This year, Hyperion Runnergy will be operating by the end of this year, 7 gigawatts. And that's coming out of the Thailand facility. They're making moves to actually start processing the raw polysilicon as well in Thailand. So they're controlling, the vertical really, and from the raw polysilicon all the way up to and including the module.
Do they make utility scale and commercial and resi, or is it just utility scale commercial?
Great question. All three categories that you just mentioned.
All right, cool. And then separate, and you know, Chris, you're going to have to send a commission to Tim later since we're advertising you here.
Yeah, just give me your routing number and everything. I'll take care of it.
So 9 to 5 when you're not flipping modules, and you work directly for Runnergy, because I've gotten emails from you from Hyperion Solar. So just to let everybody know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I still have my CL Green Consulting, where I'm basically working on the M&A side of transactions for really community solar on up through and including utility. But I do some behind the meter, large scale C&I financing. I have resources that investors and financiers that are looking to finance projects anywhere from 250 kW up to and including 5 MW behind the meter.
All right. So Chris is a developer. He has some cash access. He's good with spreadsheets, knows a lot of phone numbers, and he'll be really honest with you during the pricing process. Those are some of the details I know. And he's also based in New Mexico. So that means, I think New Mexico. Are you in New Mexico?
No, I travel there a lot. I'm actually in Southern California, right? Southern, Anaheim.
Okay, yeah. See, I have no idea what I'm talking about. I was going to make a green chili joke, but, you know, it doesn't matter.
Hatch green chilies. Can't beat them.
So I guess now he's got New Mexican friends. So there you go. all right. All right. Back to the show. Sorry, Tim. It's, you know, a little, you invited him on. So now
it's all good. It's all good. I'm glad he was able to get his mic working. And we're going to do one more product shot here. And then
let's talk about the, let's talk about the electrician thing a touch more.
Okay. Yeah. Canary Media. Shortage of electricians. It's real.
It is definitely real. And you know what? I'm not sure how it's going to play out, but with the IRA, with IRA offering us tax credits, they threw in a new niche, a new dynamic. And that dynamic is that for any projects that are greater than 1 MW AC, then the company has to pay prevailing wage and they have to have an apprentice program for the electrician. So not only do they have to pay prevailing wage, they have to have a young electrician in the field learning from the experienced folk. And I believe the ratio is, it's either A, 4 to 1, or B, you have to bring on your first one once you hit 4 full-time installers. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, as a small company, we don't have 4 installers on the books yet. And we're not doing too many 1 MW AC and above systems. We haven't signed any yet for the IRA, the new window. We have a few bids out and I had to do my spreadsheet and it was very different to have prevailing wage as my labor costs instead of Massachusetts wage numbers, which are close to the, you know, 70 grand a year, 80 grand a year for installers. Now it's like 6 figures if we are able to hold a year of installing that way. And so it's a thing to watch. The costs are going to be higher. Well, we have to charge customers higher, but hopefully bringing in that money, charging the higher rate, we'll be able to get more electricians and maybe motivate more people to become electricians. Occasionally I'll get an inbound call from a guy saying, hey, I want to become an electrician. And I push him toward, you know, a company that has a much more consistent installation rate. I also hear that, and it's going to take a little while, but the IRA also put in place incentives on a state level to allow for installations or to allow for incentivizing electricians and getting more electricians into the field. And as of yet, the states, to my knowledge, haven't rolled out the programs that back the IRA and use this cash. But I would love if we at some point got somebody on the show to teach us and the world about how the different states are training people and how actual contractors can tap into these resources. Myself, I think we really should hire ourselves an apprentice first and have them complement our electrician, because we could use the apprentice for a lot of things, site visits, you know, just taking some pictures, doing a Q&A. But it's, you got to learn how to use these people properly so that you can afford to keep them and you can give them a consistent career. So just hiring somebody for 6 months isn't really going to work. And so it's a learning thing for a small company like me who's just trying to get on their feet. I'm sure the bigger ones can handle it. The medium-sized shops are going to have some challenges, though, because they run tight. They got a budget. They got a good, sharp team. And I know some of these shops. I talk to them. And once they start having to break a megawatt, it's going to be a challenge for them. So,
yep.
But, you know, we gotta push electricians. And just to throw it out there, you know, not every state ends up with good electrician wages. You know, in the Northeast, where we have strong unions, Massachusetts and Rhode Island specifically, we have very strong wages for electricians because there's ratios. You have to have a certain number of master electricians to apprentice to journeyman. And if you don't, you get in trouble. And so that helps drive higher quality. But, you know, I'm from Florida and Texas, and in those places, there's no rules on that. And you can have a master electrician, the guy pulling the permit, and he doesn't visit the site. You got a bunch of randoms working on the site.
Yep.
And that's the case. You know, obviously your install cost is going to be lower. Your install quality might not be lesser because the people doing the work are good quality people in general, but they're not necessarily paid well. And that was part of the reason I was never in any sort of construction in Florida, is that construction is just not paid well in Florida. Mm-hmm. And I bet it's similar-ish in Texas. I don't know that for a fact, but I know in Florida, unless you're the top 1, 2, 3 people, bam, you're at the, you know, $15, $20 an hour range, and that's hard to live on. So,
yeah, you know, I worked for an IBEW contractor in Chicago, Continental Energy Solutions, and we had a group of colleagues around the country, including companies in Texas. So I do know that the IBEW exists in Texas. The solar work that the IBEW does in Texas is different than here in the upper Midwest, where we'll do soup to nuts, really, mechanical and electrical install with IBEW workers. But it varies. But in Texas, it was strictly the electrical scope, right? And then the mechanical was being done by somebody else, you know, meaning attaching the racking and the panels to the racking, and then the electricians come in just to wire it. But anyway, these traineeship requirements of the IRA, they are a pain in the rear for the contractors per se, but it's good for the economy, right? Because it forces all of us to embrace traineeship, and it will create this surge in opportunities for young people to get into the trades. And that's really the only way to drive that economy. If you just do status quo, there's just going to be this chronic shortage of electricians, and that's no bueno. As I like to say, we need more. We need a lot more electricians. So, because tripling the grid is no small matter, and solarizing the grid, it's a both and. So I say bring it on, and yeah, you have to up your game, and partner. You can partner. You don't have to create the training program yourself. You can partner with a training organization, or do it yourself. It's a both and. And I think we'll probably see more contractors joining the union, because the union has the machine figured out already, right? That is their status quo. They recruit young men and women to become trainees. They have a 3 or a 5 year program. My son is exploring this right now. And then you take a test. You got to be able to do math. That's the that's why they call the electricians the brain surgeons of the trades, right? Because they have to have more smarts than a grunt who's just carrying panels and ballast around. Electricity is dangerous. You also have to have a lot of common sense. but it's totally doable, right? You don't have to be a brain surgeon. Although they use that expression, it's funny how they refer to. Do you hear that in the Northeast, John? That electricians are the brain surgeons.
That's just marketing from the electricians.
I like it.
I mean, it is the hard work. They are the ones doing the dangerous stuff. You know, getting into those
especially
panels.
If you're doing medium voltage, right? I mean, that's some really scary stuff.
Absolutely.
Those electrons like to jump air gaps and wreak havoc. But
I step back. I always step back from that work. And I just stopped talking because I know they know a lot of stuff and I know it's challenging and I don't want to be the guy to distract. And, you know, I know there's so much I don't know. So I do my best.
Let's talk a little more about the Florida market. I want to give a shout out to, Carlos Ferreira, a solar installer down there in the Miami area. I've gotten to know recently. He's doing large commercial, industrial rooftop solar across Florida. And then also in neighboring states, he's got a project in Alabama, in Georgia, but the Florida market is not a well-known DG market, right? Because FPL, Florida Power and Light, really has a death grip on the DG market. But it is allowed, and it does pencil in about 7 years. It sounds like 7 or 8 year ROI.
Yep.
So, yep. You know, businesses can save money by going solar. What is your take on the Florida DG market, John?
So I'm from Florida, and it's where I cut my solar teeth from 2008 until 2015. And the state utilities, it's a big money state. You know, if you got a lot of big money, you can buy some politicians, you can get laws. And the state utilities in the state of Florida absolutely control the public utility commissions, which means there is no third-party electricity sale. So the key is either A, do a first-party sale where the customer fully takes ownership, or B, you lease them a system that emulates what a PPA price would have been, but it can't be for electricity. It has to be modeled as a lease. Mm-hmm. And you figure out your numbers. One positive of Florida is that they have net metering, and it's one-to-one net metering. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Additionally, the price of or the sunshine is decent. Plus, as we mentioned earlier, the cost of labor is lower. So there are some positives to installing. Now, there's some challenges, too. Along the water line, the wind code requirements are through the roof. In mm-hmm. fact, in some places, you can have a wind code requirement that's 185 miles an hour. And I've been in that before. Yeah. And installation in Coral Gables once that we did needed three rails. So instead of having two rails to attach your module to the roof, the local inspector said they wanted a third rail. And so we had to do one right down the middle of the panel. And that's how we got our wind code approved for this project in Gables, which is a very nice area.
What is the NOA? I see something called the Miami-Dade NOA. Do you know what that is?
NOAA, maybe, the National...
Oh, Notice of Acceptance, I see.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so yeah, if you're... I learned about this product, which I'll put on screen here in a minute, called SolarStack, and the commercial approach is to do flat-mounted, and they've got this foot that glues to the roof membrane, and then you mount the racking on that foot. But they've got this NOA, which I guess you have to have, right, for whatever racking product you're going to use, because it is hurricane. I want to say Hurricane Alley. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Florida and the Caribbean.
Yeah. So the NOA is, I believe it's the Miami-Dade Building Department that ends up approving products and giving it.
It's the Department of Regulatory and Economic Resources is what this letter is that I'm looking at. Board of Code Administration Division.
So Miami-Dade Building Department guides pretty much everybody that's along the coast from North Carolina down around Florida and then across to like Louisiana maybe because of the wind code. And Miami-Dade wind code is the most aggressive. They have the big resources. They have the resource. And everybody just kind of follows them once they put out the code, because they say if it covers the Miami-Dade stuff, then everyone else is going to be okay. Because, you know, if it's, you know, Hurricane Andrew is what set this stuff in motion. 1992 was a horrendous hurricane. And we saw that our building code was old and houses were just ripped apart. And since then, the wind codes have gone up and the various tools used to reach those wind code requirements have grown. And my commercial experience is very limited in Florida. My installation experience in Florida is with Resi, and we would literally strap. You would see the roof structure get strapped to the building structure to literally tie the roof instead of just using nails, but even use special nails with little hooks, teeth that hold it in place.
So
Florida commercial, what I would say the key is that you got to get your costs tight and you got to have a good roof attachment because there's so much rain that you don't want to do a million holes. However, it's really hard to do ballast because the wind code requirements. And how are you going to do 185 mile per hour wind code with ballast? You're going to have a truck up there, just a cement truck just pouring. So there's a lot of techniques that are working toward it to minimize attachments.
And that's what led me to this product, the solar stack. Now, you have to get the, you have to check this out with your roofer, whoever you want to make sure that this is approved by the roofing vendor as well. But this product was originally designed. You see the foot. It's basically a foot, and those grooves at the bottom are designed to catch into a foam that you spray on, and then it hardens, of course. And it, so you're gluing these feet to the roof, and I'll show a let's see.
You see that? That video, I think we got right. It's neat.
That one didn't
private
work.
Private video. What the heck is that?
They have some good. They have some good videos here. That was more of a resi. Oh, here's the foot going on to a flat roof,
That's nice.
Which is cool. You see, they've got the conveyor belt approach here. One guy spraying down the foam. One guy's putting the feet down, and then of course you're just gonna put another. Attachment on there, some kind of L bracket, right? That will attach to the racking.
Yep.
And away you go.
That's a really interesting product, man. There's multiple foam products I've seen over the years being developed in Florida. So I'm not surprised to see more foam based products. I knew a group in the Tampa area who had a great spray down foam technique, and it's, I've been hearing about it. I've never been involved in a project myself on it before, but I think the Orlando Convention Center has a foam. Oh, here's that crazy wind code. Check that out.
Yeah.
Look at the 180s, 170s, man.
Yep.
Oof.
But this product was originally designed for cement shingle roofs. So for residential. And you can imagine shingle roof is a little more difficult when it comes to attaching the racking. And so these guys just designed a product that just glued on top of the tiles. And now I did talk to Byron Lofton of Aspen this morning, and he questions whether or not all roofing manufacturers will allow this type of product, because you have to think of the chemical compatibility of the membrane and the foam. So it's deep water. You just have to talk to your roofing manufacturer, but in theory, this flat flush mount to a big commercial roof, I like it. And flush is, you know, low wind load, no ballast, right? And I have to say, I really like it a lot. As long as it's durable and it doesn't cause the roof to fail.
There's another version of this where you can extend a roof life by doing a spray foam on top of it. And I've never personally dealt with it. And I don't know what a roofer would say to the quality of it, but you do the same thing. You spray this gunk and you start, like I saw one guy do a big flat panel that was like a one by just a, you're flashing, but just imagine you're flashing being a foot by a foot and just laying flat on the roof. And then you do the spray over the whole roof and the flashing is sitting on the roof. And then this foam starts to harden. And so you have a large foam surface and it sounds interesting. It sounds like a great ballast replacement. So we don't have to put the heavy weights up there as well. It could add to the viability of the roof. And, you know, if you have somebody who's got a roof that's at like year 12 and they're like, what do I do? Solar roof. Well, you know, maybe this foam stuff can make it hold out through the life of the solar and keep leaks from the area underneath the panels. It's just interesting process product. I wonder how we could get it.
Well, you can definitely get it.
I don't know.
Just go to Solar Stack. Oh, you're talking about this other membrane enhancer?
Well, the solar stack, the membrane enhancer, in my mind, they're similar-ish products, similar-ish things. So, yeah. You know, one or two. I want to see it work. And if, you know, if things work in Florida, then it's going to work wind code everywhere else. So I wonder if it's available.
Yeah. Well, in neighboring Georgia, Qcells is expanding their solar panel factory. That news was all over the media. I mean, this isn't a new story, right? They actually announced this, I think, last year. But I guess it's becoming more concrete, and they're putting some flesh on the bones of what exactly they're up to. They're going to expand to 3.3 gigawatts of solar panels per year. That is a lot of solar panels, John.
No. Actually, it's more refined. They're adding 3.3 gigawatts to an already existing.
I thought the total production was going to be 3.3.
At this facility, it will be 3.3. So they currently have a facility that's 1.7 running.
Okay.
I believe they're in the process of expanding that to another 1.4, which makes 3.1 gigs of module assembly manufacturing. And then this new facility will be a fully integrated ingot, wafer, cell, module facility. And it will be, it's not the first time the country has had a fully stacked solar module manufacturing facility. For instance, First Solar, technically, right. I think is fully, and they're just different technology. Plus Solar World, way back in the day, Solar World was pulling ingots out of giant furnaces in Oregon. I remember their marketing to me in 2008. I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. I knew nothing about solar panels then. I just knew I wanted to be in solar. And they've done some good stuff. Well, they did some good stuff, but now this is new. 3.3 gigs coming from them. And the announcement last year wasn't truly an announcement. It was a scoop that was, you know, they were researching sites. And I reached out to their PR guy, Scott Markowitz. And I said, hey, what happened to that Texas site? As well, you know, the Texas site was supposed to be a 9-gigawatt fully integrated facility. Mm-hmm. And he pointed me to a quote in a Wall Street Journal article, which said those other facilities are still being considered, but this is the one that was moved on first. So there's still a chance for Hanwha, or for Qcell in the U.S. is their branded name, but Hanwha Qcells, still a chance for them to move up to even bigger volume coming. So,
and just so our listeners know, you know, most panel manufacturing in the U.S. involves receiving cells in some completed format and then putting them together into a module or a panel, as we commonly refer to them. But this is going to be the full stack, taking raw polysilicon or semi-refined maybe, and then making ingots, wafers from the ingots, solar cells from the wafers, and then modules, all under one roof. It's impressive. And I think the story said that some of the polysilicon is going to come from Alabama. So we do have some mining of polysilicon already in the U.S. And they also mentioned Canada, I think, in the story. So it's an international effort still, but this is the IRA, baby. This is good industrial policy at work. 2,500 jobs. And
do they mention, so where they mention Canada, is it for the glass by any chance? Because they signed an agreement with a glass company in Canada, who had a 4 gigawatt, or who had up to 16 gigawatts of solar glass potential. And you know, it was for a smaller facility, of course. Only like 4 gigs so far was in the initial agreement. But
maybe I'm conflating this with some other story now, because I did a search on Canada and I can't find reference to Canada in either the PV Magazine story or that you wrote. I didn't realize you wrote this story. I'll put this on screen now too. We want to give you your due, John. Is this the Jaw Solar story?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, there were three announcements yesterday for U.S. manufacturing related stuff. Jaw Solar announced, and technically they did 2 days ago or 3 days ago, just didn't get into the news. But Jaw Solar announced a module assembly factory by Q4. So they just announced it and they're going to have it done by Q4. Now, technically, all they're doing is setting up machines. So they're not like, you know, they're not making poly. They're just doing a module assembly.
Yeah.
But still, another 2 gigs. It's in Arizona. The Hanwha, or the Qcell announcement, and then Trina. Trina said that they're going to expand their wafer and cell business to specifically export to the U.S. marketplace. Mm-hmm. And so that's interesting to me because they believe maybe, or maybe they're just going to get into selling wafers and cells into the U.S. to module manufacturers. And that'd be their,
right,
you know, part of their business plan, which sounds pretty cool with the volume of, you know, module announcements, because a document I read when I was writing that Joss Solar article, and if you wanted to share it again, we could show it. But per NREL, there were like 40, 50 gigawatts of solar panel manufacturing facility. Yeah, you got to scroll down a little bit. That right there. But if you look at the column on the right, that's a big number. That's like 40, almost 50 gigs. But if you look at the prior three bars, we got cells, wafers, and poly. There's not nearly enough poly cells and wafers to feed the modules that are going to be manufactured. So what's going to happen? I don't know. We got to work on it. Got to figure it out. So we'll see. There needs to be some pushing. We got 50 gigawatts of manufacturing capacity now apparently coming, with 20-ish of it coming after the IRA.
Yep.
So we got to find more components to feed these panels if we're going to actually have, you know, good product to sell. So maybe that Trina goal is saying, hey, look at all that unfed capacity. We got to figure out how to.
Yeah. The reason you went to solar glass is that there is no solar glass manufacturing in the U.S. currently. But there is in Canada, right?
Yeah. The solar glass was in Canada that I read about. Here, let's look it up.
And isn't the, you know, I mean, one of the incentives in the IRA is that, you know, you get these adders on products that are manufactured, like in solar panels, at least 40% of the materials need to be made in the U.S. Is it U.S. strictly, though, or is it North America? Because I get conflicting information from different people on that.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, first, I put the solar glass article link on the document.
Okay.
And second, I don't know that answer. I thought it was U.S. But I don't know. I don't know explicitly. I would assume U.S. because it's domestic content, but it could be NAFTA, because NAFTA is, from a business, from a legal standpoint, NAFTA's very close to being U.S. for reasons, but it might not be.
Yeah.
So I don't explicitly know that answer.
You see the story on solar glass on screen now, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So this was earlier last year.
Yep.
And, okay, manufactured in Manitoba. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if there's been any solar glass announcements in the U.S. yet, but.
Nothing that I've heard. And this announcement from Qcell was actually the first ingot announcement. We had cells and we had wafers. This is the first time somebody said ingots will be pulled mm-hmm. in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the sourcing of the material for those ingots is the question. And then, you know, I wonder how this and the facility in Washington State from REC Silicon is going to work. Are they going to take the silicon metal to straight to the Alabama facility and process it there? Is there a step in between? I don't know enough about the material manufacturing process, but I, you know, for them to make ingots, is making the ingot a fully separate step from processing the silicon metal? And I don't know, where's that going to occur? Is it going to occur in Washington State or Georgia? How's that going to mix up? I'm interested in learning that. So if you have come across any cool articles, I'd love to read about it.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot more to come on this. And But as you've seen, if you've been following these Thursday Lives, the IRA is working. It is great industrial policy, and it's not that the manufacturer gets a major incentive. It's that they know that there's going to be a market for their product because we're leveling the playing field for American-made solar panels. You know, our labor standards are higher, our wages are higher, our healthcare standards are higher than in Southeast Asia and China. And so it costs more to make stuff here, and it should cost more to make stuff here. We want workers to have a living wage. We want workers to have benefits. We want them to have protections. And so it's okay to incentivize these things. The energy transitions globally have always been incentivized by government. That is the nature of the beast. And we're still subsidizing fossil fuels and the fossil economy massively. So we have to level the playing field. That's the mantra here. Level the playing field, make solar competitive with the international market. We've been late to the game, John, when it comes to solar product manufacturing. And it's so ironic because we invented the damn technology ourselves in New Jersey in 1954. It's only right that we should reap the full benefits and make the stuff at home. And there's other parts of the food chain, you know, the racking. I love Panel Claw because they are an American-made product. The steel is made right in America. You can get product in 6 weeks from time of order. There's no waiting for a container to cross the ocean. And if you don't know about Panel Claw for large commercial, check it out. It's the real deal. It's a wonderful product. World's most popular flat roof racking. Does not work on metal roofs, I learned. But most large flat commercial roofs are membrane. So did a lot of Panel Claw at Continental. All right, we should probably move on. Oh, wow, it's 11:48. Time flies when you're having fun.
Always talking about it, man. We could talk about this solar stuff for hours on end. That's what we do.
Should we do the project of the week?
Project of the week. This is a new one we signed.
Cape Cod. Very cool.
About an hour from our office, West Dennis. Small rooftop. They're taking out an old system that's, they might be taking out an old system. We'll see. But this very simple one-line diagram using a little Fronius, using some Q-cell modules, probably. We'll see what's available. We haven't finalized the roof layout yet. There's still some questions from the owner, what their goals are, how visible they want it. So we'll be dancing with that modules. We had to put something in there for the interconnection application.
Sure.
It's a two-story building. That little south facing chunk plus the east west, and we'll wire the three together. All the interconnection stuff you can see is right below that south facing chunk. You can see the red, the blue, and the black. So it should be a nice, easy wire run. And it's just a nice little good looking install. Random lead. They found us online. They cold called us and said, hey, give us some numbers, site visit. It was a nice, smooth one to move through. And it's going to be behind the meter. So their savings are going to be great. And, here's that, picture. And they have a really gorgeous, insulation. Here it is. So this is their attic, and you know, you can kind of sort of see me, my feet way back there over there on the right, but that was me climbing up into the roof, had to pull the insulation back. But the insulation in this structure was just wonderful. And they even had a little box so that when you climbed up the ladder to get into the attic, you had to, and you pulled open the roof, you then had this box of insulation that was sitting on top of the square so that it wouldn't leak. I was like, guys, you did some good work here. And you know, they're house builders. So this is also a great customer to take good care of. Like, you know, we do our best with everybody, but I would love to get into building solar on new houses and have some good house builder relationships. And so my hope is that we do a good job for these folks, and they want to keep working with us. So that's a project of the week. We We almost submitted for interconnection yesterday, but we're still waiting on a couple of pieces of data before we submit. So I hope to submit for connection today.
Very cool. Good luck. Well, we could talk about the price of silicon. We could talk about Tesla solar roof. We could talk about fusion in France. Boo-hoo.
Well, here, let's do the solar roof super fast just so we could look at some pictures. And then I would love to talk about the polysilicon pricing article because it was a really cool one to do the math on.
Sure.
But I just loved the picture here of this Tesla roof, especially like the third one that's on this LinkedIn thing. So it's beautiful. You know, it looks like, look at that. That almost looks like a spaceship or a boat. Or something. Or is it just me who's a fan?
Yeah, it does kind of have a space age feel to it for sure. And it is.
This looks so
I love the texture and the color. It's very slick. Mm-hmm. I'm so curious why Tesla seems to be struggling so much with this product. It is beautiful. But it's you know, it's not being sold in volume.
I think it has to do with the slow installation rate and the fact that everyone is custom, like even more custom than our projects, Tim. I mean, every solar project is custom, but at least the components are consistent.
Yeah.
In this case, the components are just like, oh, so you got to probably do two or three site visits before you can close out a deal. And I bet you that's a lot of a headache. That's my assumption. I don't know. Being inside that machine must be tough. But
yeah, I mean, cool, you got to be a roofer, man. Basically, right?
Yep.
And so it's roofers getting into installing solar tiles, and it's going to go mainstream eventually. I'm going to have GAF. They make a roofing tile. Going to have them on the show, and I'm trying to get them to bring an installer with them for that interview. So. We'll see. Maybe we'll bring that on the Thursday live. I don't know yet. But this is a nice project. All right. So we're going to talk about the cost of polysilicon, John's favorite topic.
I like to talk about it. So if we wanted to get to the crux of this article, we could read the title and then scroll through real fast. So
silicon costs per watt down 96% over last two decades.
Yes. Wow. And it's a combination of two things. One, the volume of polysilicon per watt is down by 87%. Mm-hmm. And then two, the inflation adjusted price is down by 76. 87 times 76 equals 96. And I'll show you the math. So first, let's look at this first graph. Scroll down a little bit. We can see that in 2004, up to 16 grams of poly per watt. We can see that by 2021, we're approaching 2 grams. So right there, we've seen it drop by 87%, the amount of silicon needed per gram. And that's a big number. That's one-eighth. That's one-eighth of what it used to be. And so first off, there we go. We're changing. A whole bunch of polysilicon is no longer needed in the equation. Then let's look at the price of poly. Scroll down a little bit. So we got this graph, which is cool. That shows that back in 2004-ish, poly started around $28, ended almost $60. Bernd Reuter, who's super smart. Like if you want to know anything about poly, this is the guy, Bernd Reuter, Johannes Bernd Reuter. Mm. He's the best. And so then of course you see the major peak. But then you saw the return to the norm. And, you know, I chat about this return to the norm, but then I add in the fact that, you know, in 2000 or so, we had that price climb that saw things go up to, you know, $40-$45, but we're in the midst of another price crash. And so the price of polysilicon is back down to about $15-$16, mm-hmm. which is low. And mm-hmm. so for this article, I did it at $17. And scroll down a little bit. Let's talk about some inflation. All right, inflation calculator. So if we look at the price of poly costing $45 in the year 2004, And then we account for 2022, 45 is equal to $70 when we account for inflation. If the price of is today $17, that means, you know, the price of poly is actually 1/4 of what it was in 2004 before the big run up. So we do that little math right below. We say $71 polysilicon at 16 grams per watt is effectively $1.14 per watt just for the poly. Now think about it. Today, we buy panels for 30 cents a watt.
Yeah.
And the poly alone was over a dollar. Then we do today's thing, 2.2 grams at $17 a kilogram, 4 cents a watt.
Yep.
That makes sense. The difference between $1.14 and 4 cents is that the real price of polysilicon has come down in a solar panel by 96.7%.
Beautiful.
And that is a big story, dude. That's awesome.
Yeah, so, polysilicon is something I want to learn more about. You know, the whether your modules are mono or poly, they're made from polysilicon. And it's also a metal, but we make glass from silicon. So that always confuses me, to be honest, right? Is glass a metal? If you can make silicon metal and glass is made of silicon, is silicon glass a metal? I don't know. But
you can make glass out of silicon, pure glass.
What is the main ingredient in glass?
It's
sand.
It's sand.
Yeah, it's sand. It's silicon.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you technically can have clear aluminum and clear. I don't know about clear gold, but I've definitely seen clear aluminum in the world.
Yeah. Well, just Google it. What is glass made of? The answer is silicon.
Yeah. No, I did know that. But, you know, thinking about is the standard silicon rock, though, different than silicon metal? Are those two different products?
Yeah. Yeah. Clearly, they are different. Because silicon metal is a gray, a shiny, silvery gray material. And you see that color consists through the process when you make solar cells out of it, right? But yeah, it's funky. I mean, you can think of carbon. Carbon does the same thing, right? You can make diamonds out of carbon or you can make black carbon out of carbon. And who'd have thunk that you can make a clear crystal out of a mineral that's black in some forms? Bizarre. And they're both pure, right? Pure carbon black, pure carbon diamond. it's just nature is just so wild. Nature and physics and material science. All right. Well, we've come to the end of another lovely live broadcast from us here at the Clean Power Hour. Check out all of our content at cleanpowerhour.com. Give us a rating and a review on Apple and Spotify so that others can find this content and help us speed the energy transition. And please subscribe to our YouTube channel just by clicking on the YouTube icon there. John Weaver, how can our listeners find you?
CommercialSolarGuy.com. And then there's a contact us tab. That's the best way. That's how most people find us. Twitter as well. I try to post educational material. Much of it ends up here. And then LinkedIn. So it's Solar in Mass, or just type in Commercial Solar Guy. And then LinkedIn, John Fitzgerald Weaver. And strangely, I'm now on Mastodon, which is the new.
You did it. You did it.
I set up an account.
Are you keeping up? Are you keeping up? How are you?
Nah, I'm not even keeping up with my news reading. I'm so slow with my news these days. I've just been so busy for the last 6 months. My energy is elsewhere. I gotta re-zoom in on reading my news feed, man, because that's where the beautiful knowledge that I find comes from. So news feed focus. That's my my New Year's resolution. Read the news feed, go to the gym. That's it. That's all I got to do better this year. Otherwise, I'm perfect.
Are you going to leave Twitter? Say goodbye to Elon?
You know, That's a different podcast, Tim. That's a politically focused podcast.
It's a tough question, isn't it?
Yeah. It's complex.
I know many people are. Many people, even friends of Elon, like Sam Harris, has left Twitter because he's done with Crazy Town. But anyway, thanks for being here, John. Really appreciate you. And thank you to all our listeners. We do this for you. And I'm Tim Montague. Let's grow solar and storage. The Clean Power Hour is brought to you by CPS America, the maker of North America's number one three-phase string inverter, with over 6 gigawatts shipped in the U.S. The CPS America product lineup includes three-phase string inverters ranging from 25 to 275 kW. Their flagship inverter, the CPS250-275, is designed to work with solar plants ranging from 2 megawatts to 2 gigawatts. The 250-275 pairs well with CPS America's exceptional data communication, controls, and energy storage solutions. Go to chintpowersystems.com to find out more.